Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. In this episode, we're focusing on fueling the bodies of athletes, and particularly female athletes. I'm hoping that we'll learn some strategies that may also be useful, not just for athletes, but for active people generally. Now, we've made episodes in the past about how to get the right nutritional balance, as well as highlighting the lack of research into the nutritional needs of sports women. But today we're getting more specific and honing in on something called low energy availability. Now, it's a big concern in the world of sport nutrition, but what is it and how does it affect performance and how does it relate to nutrition? I'm delighted to be joined by leading sports dietitian Rini McGregor, who's going to help us answer some of those questions. Welcome to the podcast, Rini.
Hi, Stefan. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you back in. Now, what do we mean by low energy availability and why is it a particular concern for female athletes?
Okay, so the term low energy availability is basically when we think about energy requirements, we all humans need energy to live and to then do whatever activities they want to do, whether that's training, whether that's just movement, whatever that might be. And we tend to get fixated on an energy requirement that we need. So, you know, most people will have heard of calories, and that's a unit of energy. And often we say, oh, we need X number of calories a day type thing. And basically what happens is, particularly in people who are very active, when you consume food, consume energy, energy is first basically used for movement. So the body will always prioritize energy for movement, whatever that is, whether that is like, you know, you going for a run, you walking your dog, you walking your kids to school, it will always do that. That's just how we have evolved fundamentally. And then energy availability is the energy that is left over once our body has used what it needs for movement. It's the energy that's left over for biological processes. So by that, we mean our brain, our heart, our lungs, our repair, our recovery, our, you know, blood, you know, building blood cells, our bone health, all those things that we need to be a human. And low energy availability is when there isn't sufficient energy available to do those jobs. So occasionally, if it happens, like sometimes we might not get the balance right, it's not a big deal. The body manages. Low energy availability becomes a problem when somebody is chronically not getting enough energy to do those jobs that the body needs to do. And this is where it becomes problematic, because fundamentally, the body then starts to slowly shut down. So a bit like your smartphone, when it's on low battery mode and it starts to switch off kind of apps that it doesn't need, the body has to do that. So it starts to slow all metabolic processes in the body right down. And the reason why it's more sensitive in women, so I wouldn't say it's more problematic, it occurs in both men and women, but the reason why it's more sensitive in women is because fundamentally women's bodies are much more sensitive, because we have been designed to reproduce. And so if the body senses there's not enough energy to maintain a pregnancy or to be able to reproduce, it's not safe in the body, then of course it shuts it down. And so often what we find is the symptoms associated with low energy availability are much more apparent in women quicker than they are in men. But that's not to say that both don't suffer from it.
What are some of the common signs and symptoms of low energy availability?
Okay, so one of the first, but one of the most common signs, and also why it's picked up in women quicker than men, is that you start to get hormonal disturbances, so particularly reproductive hormone disturbances. So what women might notice is that their menstruation becomes affected. So it doesn't necessarily always stop immediately, but it might become more erratic, it might become a bit lighter. You may notice that you miss one or two, and eventually you may have complete cessation of your menstrual cycle. And so this is one of the common symptoms. And the one I probably see most in my clinic is that this is why a lot of female athletes will come to clinic, because they've noticed that their, you know, that their menstruation has become affected. However, it's not the only symptom. There are lots of others. So for example, often we would see, if we were to do blood tests on individuals, often we would see that their immune system had become depressed. So their white cell count is very low. And this is just, again, because the body hasn't got enough energy to produce a healthy immune system. Your digestive system becomes affected. So often people will notice that they get symptoms that are very similar to IBS. So bloating, discomfort, like, you know, real kind of extreme pain, and a general sense of fullness all the time, which doesn't help the overall situation. But this is probably not IBS. Like, it's a very difficult one to diagnose. And you do have to ask a battery of questions to work out, is this IBS or is this what is known in the industry as gastroparesis, which is the slow movement of food through the system because there's not enough energy to digest fundamentally. Another one that we see is recurrent injuries. So bone stress is the one that is often most commonly associated with low energy availability, but it's not the only injury. You can get a lot of ligament and tendon injuries. So if you're getting recurrent problems, you know, with your tendons, your ligaments, your joints, that could be a sign that, you know, your body is not getting enough energy, is not recovering very well, and, you know, basically it can't respond to the training stimulus. And that is another big key one, is that often you won't see the adaptation you would expect. So what is a bit frustrating about low energy availability is that sometimes you get a couple of really good results in terms of performance, and then the body goes, that's it, I can't do anymore. Like, I've got nothing left in the tank. This is not sustainable. And it's very hard then often for the individual to appreciate that, because they've had good results, they think, but, you know, I had good results, so it can't be that. But often that is the thing. And so when you, again, when you notice month after month that you're putting all the work in, but you're not getting the progression that you would expect to get, whether that's from a body composition point of view or whether that's from a performance point of view, that could also be an indicator that you haven't got enough energy in the system. And then a couple of other things are more kind of, I suppose, more observational, in the sense of sometimes you might find your sleep becomes worse because, again, when the body is hungry, it can't sleep. So it's sort of staying awake, looking for food. Mood will drop, and that will be related to the hormonal drops. But also, again, when the body is hungry, it's low in energy, which means it's low in mood. You might start to notice you're feeling cold. And one of the classic things, and I think probably hopefully something people will take away, is that you won't necessarily lose weight. So this is where it's different, say, to a restrictive eating disorder. Although there's some similarities, this is where it's different, because low energy availability, particularly in people who are active, often they don't lose weight because, again, as like I said, the body is prioritizing energy for movement, and then it's working on preserving energy and keeping that person as safe as it can. So everything else starts to shut down and the body's definitely breaking down. You get what we call metabolic injury, but they don't always lose weight.
Now, I mean, there must be a psychological aspect to this as well, because, I mean, what you've described sounds pretty dramatic, you know, changes to your reproductive sort of setup, there must be issues such as depression that must come alongside this. It sounds like it's sort of a syndrome rather than a disease. Is that how you would characterize it?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting observation, Stefan. I guess low energy availability is fundamentally a situation that underpins a bigger syndrome known as REDS, which is relative energy deficiency in sport. So what we've just described, those symptoms we've described, when they are apparent, then potentially the individual probably has REDS rather than low energy availability. So low energy availability, I guess, is a symptom of a bigger problem. And you're quite right. It can be intentional and it can be unintentional. So unintentional reds does happen when an individual just doesn't appreciate how much fuel they need. But the difference with these individuals is that, you know, maybe they present with a couple of niggles, a couple of injuries, and, you know, you do a full assessment, you realize that this is probably down to poor fueling, under-resting, maybe over-competing. And these individuals are really, really receptive to your intervention and will often accept what you say. And within a few months, their bodies will kind of recuperate and they'll return back to normal. So this is unintentional reds where somebody might just doesn't appreciate, but actually is very willing to change to get performance goals. And then you have intentional reds or intentional low energy availability, if we want to call it that, which is very much related to disordered eating and eating disorders, in that this is a psychological issue, in that the individual feels the need to restrict their intake and or overexercise. So they're fundamentally trying to contain. I tend to use the word contain rather than control, but trying to contain, I guess, their emotions through food and exercise. So it's a much more complex psychological problem and does take a lot longer to recover from when it's intentional.
Mm. And are there specific sports where athletes are more prone to low energy availability?
So generally speaking, when this phenomenon was first appreciated and known, it was often associated with more aesthetic sports. So you know, gymnastics, ballet, and also weight making sports. So judo, boxing, mm-hmm. Lightweight rowing, but also with endurance sports. So running, triathlon, you know, these were the main sports that we would, I guess, are probably the sports that highlighted it as a problem, shall we say. But actually, over the last few years, and when I was doing my research last year for my book, More Fuel You, I was looking at the incidence of low energy availability and the sports distribution. And actually, we now know that it's actually possible in pretty much every sport. The only sport that doesn't seem to be making a big appearance is rugby. But even football, particularly women's football, like, again, there was a study that came out earlier this year from Lancaster University that demonstrated that, you know, 36% of female Premier League players had sort of a dysfunctional relationship with food, which was then leading to low energy availability. I mean, that's quite a big figure.
That's huge, isn't it? Yeah, terrifying.
And this is football, which again is not a sport we would have normally associated with this. So I think it's a bigger problem. I think often when we're looking at the prevalence of something like reds or eating disorders in sport, there are certain sports our brain immediately thinks to go to. And I understand why, absolutely. But I think it's really important to highlight here that it's a bigger problem than we first thought.
Yeah.
And probably affects, it's more about the individual and the environment they're in than it really is about the sport, I think, if
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does make a lot of sense. So okay, this is a food industry podcast. Let's talk about nutrition. What role does nutrition play in low energy availability? And does what you eat matter?
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, low energy availability. So the first thing you want to try and do is restore energy availability, right? You want to make sure that we get that intake back up so that there's enough energy available for the body to do all those jobs that we're asking it to do. But there are some key nutrients that we know are critical, particularly when it comes to hormonal restoration. So, you know, so carbohydrate is a really important nutrient in this whole process. So making sure that, particularly when you are being physically very active, that you are taking enough carbohydrate, and not just in the immediate moment before you train, but actually throughout the day. So the timing of carbohydrate is also critical. And, you know, if you are doing a lot of endurance sport, and I say endurance sport, but I think anything that is over, 90 minutes, then you need to be thinking about consuming carbohydrate during as well. Mm-hmm. So what I have seen quite a lot of, Stefan, is over the years, and you've probably discussed this previously, you know, at some point, but over the years, we've seen the rise of fasted training, like a lot of people doing, you know, fasted workouts. So waking up first thing in the morning and training on empty. We've also seen more recently the rise of intermittent fasting and the potential, you know, people saying that's important from a health point of view. And I always say to athletes and individuals who are physically very active, while there may be some people that will benefit, so perhaps, you know, a population group that may benefit from that approach, when it comes to athletes and those that are physically very active, that approach is not relevant and is not really okay. So what I find is one of the biggest contributors to REDS and low energy availability is often this fasted training. So this training that they do first thing in the morning without any fuel. So it's what we then term as low carbohydrate availability. There's not enough carbohydrates. So nutrition does play a big, big role in your recovery from this. And it's, I think the biggest education I give people that I work with is appreciating that training and being a human is an expensive process. Like, energy is really very, very key. And I think it's very hard because, you know, there are so many different population groups within, let's just talk about the UK, and some people may well need to be more mindful of the amount of food they consume and may need to increase their activity levels. And that's very much, some of the messaging is absolutely appropriate for them. But there's also many, many individuals in our society who are physically very, very active. And those messages can be quite harmful to them because, you know, obviously everybody wants to get it right. Like, again, we as humans, we always want to kind of try and conform and we want to do everything right. So if you're hearing a message of, you know, move more, eat less, of course, that's kind of what you will think about doing. Mm. And yet, hopefully after today, when people hear this podcast, they'll realize that, oh, maybe that isn't the right approach for me because I am somebody that, you know, does train regularly or does exercise most days. And actually that approach maybe isn't appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that everyone's different, but are there any sort of generalized dietary strategies that can help female athletes maintain optimal energy availability, you know, overall, or is the advice very personalized?
It is very personal because I think obviously every female athlete that, let's say, presents themselves at clinic will come from a slightly different background, whether it's how long they've been struggling with low energy availability, what their past history was. Like, you know, often what I find, particularly in the athletics world, is that usually when you start digging a little bit deeper, a lot of these individuals will have had some form of eating disorder as a teenager, and actually sport almost became what they turned to and they realized that they were good at it. But sometimes difficult relationships with food have not fully healed. Yeah. And so this is where it can become problematic. So we do have to take that into consideration. Obviously, the sport that they're doing, the level of athlete they are, okay, sometimes we do need to modify training because that's a big part of this as well, recovery from this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in some situations, that's really difficult. If you're working with a pro athlete who's got a big competition coming up in 6 weeks' time, trying to tell them that they need to back off for 6 weeks, that's not going to go down well.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a complicated recovery process. And I think it really does take a bit of a team effort. Like, you know, I always tend to work with the coaches, and if we can get some sort of psychological involvement, we'll always do that as well. And, you know, often we'll work with medics as well, just to make sure that we're not missing anything. But I think overall, it is about restoration of energy availability. Carbohydrate is a key component of that, but also some of the other key nutrients. So things like calcium, vitamin D, protein are also going to be really, really important, particularly if someone has presented with a bone stress fracture or a bone stress injury and has a history of, you know, disruptive menstrual cycle, you know, the low energy availability, the poor menstrual cycle. These are all contributors to low bone health. And so obviously we want to maximize bone health. So we want to make sure, and while estrogen is the most important component of bone health, so getting a female athlete to restore their menstrual cycle is the key objective. Obviously that takes time. And so equally, we want to make sure that we're putting all the other building blocks in. So, you know, like I said, vitamin D, calcium. And the other thing that can be really useful is B vitamins.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not necessarily saying you need to take supplements and all of these, like trying to get them through food is always the best way. But B vitamins, there's been a really big rise in research that has shown that B vitamins in particular can help reduce anxiety. So that again is really critical, because another big feature of REDS in particular is, although low energy availability underpins it and causes stress in the body, that is the big issue here, equally it increases anxiety, because when the body is in low energy availability, the brain is not getting enough energy, and so it sends out this message of threat, which is anxiety.
Oh my gosh, so there's again, so much, there's a huge mental health aspect to this, isn't there?
It's really, really, it's so much more complicated than people assume, I think. And this is one of the reasons, like, it's so great to be able to speak about it, because again, it's become a topic of interest, and you know, lots of people are talking about it, particularly on social media, but not really truly understanding that it's multifaceted and needs a lot of support. And it's not just as simple as like, here's a nutrition plan, off you go. It can be if you've got somebody in unintentional, but if you've got somebody who's intentional, it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah. And looking at this area as a whole, how has our understanding of low energy availability evolved, and what new research is emerging in the field?
I think, so for those clinicians that have worked in eating disorders, they will be aware of low energy availability, because it's a classic reason for a lot of the psychological behaviors and issues we see in people who have restrictive eating disorders. But it's never been called low energy availability. That term has come through sport. And so this is kind of, I suppose, one of the areas why I find it so interesting, because I came from a clinical background. I've been working in sports nutrition for the last sort of 12 years, and it's been really great to bridge that gap between clinical and sport, and help people see that, you know, we're working with we've actually got quite a lot of research in this already, but we need to bridge that gap and start utilizing it so that we can help a larger variety of people. So the research coming in through sport can help those with, you know, clinical eating disorders, and the research that we've previously done through clinical eating disorders can definitely help those in sport. But I think the term low energy availability is still relatively new. Like, it's probably only been around for the last, probably since 2016. So not that long at all. We definitely need more research. There's a lot of research into REDS at the moment, a lot of work being done. I've also been part of a consensus group where we've been looking at the management, the causation and the management of REDS, particularly in dance. So particularly in like ballet dance. So I've been on part of this consensus group of experts who across the four main ballet dance companies in the country. And that's been really good, because we've had to systematically review all the evidence that's out there and then ensure that the consensus statement we put out, which should come out later this year or early next year, is all the up-to-date information on how to manage this, how to become aware of it, and then how to signpost. So there is a lot of research happening in this area, but I think where there may be a bit more work needed is actually training practitioners up to identify it and to work with it in an appropriate manner. And that, I think that does need to be a very joint up approach within a team, so that I don't think it's always an easy thing to work in isolation. And often when people come to me, they may work with me for a few weeks or a few months, and then I'll be signposting them accordingly so that, you know, they get the overall support that they need.
So let's talk a little bit about Train Brave. Can you explain what it is and what's the work that you do with Train Brave?
Yeah, so Train Brave was, I co-founded Train Brave back in 2017. It's a campaign more than anything else. It was a campaign to raise awareness of REDS and low energy availability and fundamentally eating disorders in sport, because, you know, a lot of people don't appreciate that eating disorders and this restrictive eating or even this addictive behavior to training occurs in athletes and particularly in sport, because often sport disguises it so very, very well. But it was something that I was seeing more and more and more. And actually, if you look at the research, we know that back in 2016, at that point, there was a study that was done and it showed that there was a 20% higher prevalence of disordered eating and dysfunctional exercise in athletes compared to their non-athletic peers.
Wow, that's a huge
amount. And since then, we've had more work being done in this area. So, like, I think now it's been suggested that actually it may be even higher than 20% because of the work that's being done. And so I wanted to raise awareness of this. And it was obviously an area I was working in. I've been working in for a very long time. I worked in adolescent eating disorders as my clinical role. And then when I moved into sports nutrition, my first job was working with rhythmic gymnastics. So I basically had to combine both that sports knowledge and that clinical knowledge together to make sure these athletes stayed safe fundamentally. And from there on in, I kept seeing it, no matter which sport I worked in, there was always a high percentage of individuals that were suffering and struggling. And I realized that it probably wasn't just in the elite world, you know, it was probably wider spread. And while in the elite world, you've got that support system, you've got individuals like me that can pick it up and support and help you. But in the amateur world, should we say, or the recreational world of sport, they don't have that. They don't have that knowledge. They don't have that awareness. And so this is why we started this campaign. It was myself and Tom. And Tom had experienced bulimia as a runner. And he wanted to kind of discuss what he'd been through and actually how much it had affected him. And so we ended up sort of traveling around the country, and we brought Dr. Nikki Kay in as well as an endocrinologist. And we traveled around the country for about 18 months delivering workshops on what it is, how you support, what you can do. And all these workshops were free, like there was no cost to them at all. And then COVID hit, which made things a little bit difficult. So we couldn't do it. And at that point, I think Tom got married. I think he just wanted to separate himself from it. I think it was something he really wanted to do. And he separated himself from it. So I'll be honest, Stefan, since COVID, we've done very little with Train Brave. It's still up and running. We still have a website. We still have an Instagram page where there's lots of resources and people can still go. And there's a really good podcast as well. Like I did record 4 series of a podcast called Train Brave. And I know lots of people find it very, very helpful because, you know, we go into the sort of nitty gritty of what it is and what you can do. And it's definitely something that's on, you know, it's on my radar to do more with over the coming years. But yeah, life's been a little bit hectic, shall we say.
I can imagine. And all those resources are still there for people to be able to use anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess the other big question I've got really is the broader application of treatments for low energy availability. How much of what we've talked about applies to people who aren't necessarily athletes, but maybe lead an active lifestyle anyway?
A big. Like I actually probably worry about this group more than I do worry about athletes because I think, again, it's probably these individuals who are physically very active. They're probably a certain personality type, which is a big part of this as well. And they're being bombarded by messaging, whether that's public health messaging or whether that's social media messaging. And, you know, often it's that combination of the personality type, the kind of sports environment they're in, and then those societal ideals that create the perfect storm for this dysfunctional behavior to occur. So again, you get that, you know, you'll get probably a smaller percentage of individuals who just don't appreciate how much fuel they need and will end up in this place, but will soon turn it around. But you'll end up with a higher percentage, probably more like 70%. I think on last count, that was what the last study showed, that about 70% of recreational athletes had signs of low energy availability. Wow. Which is huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, huge.
Well, that's been absolutely fascinating. I've learned a huge amount, and I never realised how prevalent low energy availability was. So, Renny McGregor, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm really pleased that you're broadcasting this episode, because I think it is such an important area for people to become aware of. So thank you so much for having me.
That's a great pleasure. Also, do you want to give a quick shout out for More Fuel You?
Yes. So my book, More Fuel You, came out last June. Actually, there's a big section on REDS and low energy availability, and also big section on female athletes in the book. So if you can't always access a practitioner, there's a lot you can learn from the book, and hopefully that will help at least start the process of recovery for those that need it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, I'd like to tell you about a series of events that we've got coming up. Food Matters Live Inspiring Nutrition. The events will explore the latest innovative solutions advancing sustainable nutrition. You can become a partner or apply to attend by searching Food Matters Live Inspiring Nutrition or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.